podcasting to the world.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace. That was Mike Williams. And this is the Gospel Revolution.
Someone apocalypsed me. I never felt like this before.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for February 2, 2018, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Michael Williams. How you doing?
Good morning, Donald Bartlett. I am doing very well. Things are well here in Palm Beach Gardens. You know, as I got
well enough about you. Now about me.
As I got up this morning, I was rehashing kind of last week's PowerCast and our looking over 2017 and all the bright things that are coming about in 2018 already. And so it's been good. And yes, to your point, your insistent point, how are you?
Oh, sorry. I wasn't ready.
You weren't expecting that, right?
I am great, mate. It's a great, mate. I'm looking out at sunshine just pouring out of heaven and a totally clean, clear blue sky, and it's just, mate, it's a gorgeous day here. What can I say? Of course, it is 28 degrees, but in northern Alabama, northern Alabama is looking pretty good today.
Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't know northern Alabama could look good, but I mean, you know, hey.
Michael, I am here. It's
like I said, I didn't know Northern Alabama could look good.
I'm like bacon, you know, it just improves anything, you know what I mean?
No, you know, it actually is a very beautiful area of the country.
Don't try sucking up now. I mean, you've gone and done it already.
I thought about all those contributors from Northern Alabama, and it hit right.
Yeah. Suddenly you thought, oh, no, Judy Tonini in Huntsville, and there's this one and that one, and there's Ted, and there's yeah, you did it, mate. Sorry. That's going to air.
You know, the United States really is just beautiful.
It's okay. It's okay.
I think of that compared to Australia, and it's just like, you know, you know, you guys have the edges of a continent to live on. We get to live on the whole continent. So
that's because you had no choice. You had to go to the arid desert areas. We didn't. We just said, what's the best real estate around here? And we took it. You know, we just...
Just stayed around the edges, didn't you?
Say Happy Australia Day, Donald.
Oh, and today is Australia Day.
Well, it's when we're recording, but yes, yes.
Awesome. Well, congratulations. Do you miss home?
Oh, yeah, I do miss home, mate. I don't know why, because it's becoming more like America every day, but I do miss home.
It's that good, huh?
The cost of living is rising, and it's a different place than it was when I left 15 years ago, but it's still home. You know what I'm sure. I mean, to go to the Outback and just...
Oh, they have the Outback Steakhouse there too?
Have you been off your meds again, Michael Williams? Are you in eating red meat again? there's nothing I like better than camping in the outback by a creek, cooking your own billy tea and a damper, and that is kind of nice. But anyway, that's another life, and it's another. And sometimes I think I've had a very fortunate life because I've had two or three lives, to be honest, and each one of them, I never died in any of them. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. I do know the feeling.
Mike, this year we have four pledge drives. We are just coming up to the end of the first one, the winter pledge drive, 2018. We've got two physical conferences. That is where you will be present. And we've got two Skype conferences. That's where you will still be present, but in spirit only. So we've got a lot of exciting stuff happening. We'll come to some of that in the show a little bit later. But let's kick off with a comment by Robert Vacanti. Rob Vacanti, he wrote at the end of the last podcast. Now, the last podcast, I think, was one of the best ones we put out. But, hey, what do I know? Sometimes I think they're great and they're not, and sometimes I think they're not and they are. But last week's was a particularly interesting one because we took a verse, reverse engineered it, and honest to goodness, it never gets old seeing how badly translated sometimes our Bible verses are.
And you know, the thing that you have drilled in to my thinking over these last 6 years, and it's taken a long time, but not just the mistranslations, but the consistent bias of the translations, including the King James, the grandfather of them all, you know, and from that bias of Christianity, then all of these other translations are then translated from that original bias. Now, the nice thing about the King James is that we actually have Paul's letters. Oh, my God. You know, it's like, what would we do if it were not for Paul's letters, the consistency of his letters?
You bet.
But then we have the translation bias of Paul's letters. It's really weird because there's they didn't have to use translation bias in Peter, James, and John.
Isn't that fascinating?
It's just absolutely fascinating. There is not information bias. There's more consistent translation of the letters accurately than there is with the books that Paul wrote. And that really is just mind-boggling. But even pertaining to the, including the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, there's even information bias there. You know, things like, I never will forget this, Don. I am the Lord God, I change not. And oh my gosh, and a very simple look at this, a concordance to see the definition of these words. And it's like, how did they do it? I can't even imagine how it got translated that way, because it means the Hebrew means just the opposite. I'm the Lord God, I never do anything the same as I did it the last time, which fits with the story. So, and even the context of it then fits. And he goes on to say, you know, I'm the Lord God. I don't do anything twice, because if I did, you'd be just like those other guys I wiped off the face of the earth. And man, so these things, to why this stuff is so exciting to me, I can see that, and it's like, that is like a 1 week vacation, you know, on the French Riviera for me. Oh my gosh. And it just happens still very consistently. And now that we've caught that drift, you know, once you can tell which way the wind's blowing, you can kind of follow that, and you wind up finding more than you ever, ever did. And again, another, analogy is like finding a little few sprinkles of gold, you know, at the mouth of a cave. You follow those little sprinkles, you begin to pick up on a little thread, and next thing you know, you're in a vein of gold you just never expected to be there. You just thought this was an empty cave. Well, we've been digging in empty caves of the scriptures for a long time now, and boy, have we found some treasures that we thought were already dug in. We thought they were already mined. We thought, it was, goodness gracious, we've had 2,000 years of Christianity, to mine the scriptures and also to mine the writings of the New Testament. But man, we're still finding just the most magnificent, and I have to use it in those terms because, Don, these are treasures. Treasures that transform our way of viewing everything, because just like I am the Lord God, I change not. You see, I don't think we are grateful enough for what we've learned in these things. Just think of it, just that one concept alone. Oh, how many arguments have you been in and debates and discussions about the scriptures and what God does and doesn't do, and just the gospel of peace. Do you know that's the number one thing, Don, I got hit with all the time when I preached the gospel of peace, that God was no longer angry. Oh, I'm the Lord God, I change not. You're saying God changed. And in all of my wisdom, the only thing I could come up with was, well, God didn't change, but the covenant did, which I thought was a brilliant response. At least it was a response. But to have to play Twister with Christians, oh my God, I hate having to play Twister with Christians. And I'd like to play Twister with somebody else, but let's try playing Twister with some Buddhist, you know, or whatever. But this has been a magnificent thing. As you can tell, I'm stoked this morning. I think that this...
You are. You're wound up like an old-fashioned clock.
I tell you, when an old man gets a good night's sleep, you better watch out.
I was speaking to somebody during the week, and I was trying to explain how different languages are so very different. For example, if I, in English, said, I will dig, I need three words for that. I need one word to tell me it's first person, it's I. Yeah. I need another word to tell me it's future tense, not past tense or present tense. I will dig. And I need the verb to tell me what the action is I'm doing.
Right.
And I asked this person, because this person was using Strong's to deduce what a verse was saying. The problem with that is that Mr. Strong only uses what's called the lemma, the root of the word. So I will believe becomes pistis or pisteo. There is no indication in there of the case, who's doing what to whom and for how much, of the tense, future, past, present, of the person, first person, second person, you, third person, they. There is nothing. But all of this is contained in one single word in the Greek. So unless you actually can understand the suffixes and prefixes and add-ons to a lemma or a root, you're going to miss a lot of what the Greek is saying. And I was saying to this person that the best way I know, if you want to get as close as you can to understanding the Greek yourself, go get yourself the Interlinear Scripture Analyzer. It's available for free on the web. And it will give you all of these things. It will give you that it's a second person, past tense, and it'll give you the root. It'll give you everything that you need to know. Mm-hmm. And you'll be able to interpret things that, say, the King Jimmy has fouled up. You'll be able to interpret it quite accurately. And when you look at the Strong's numbers, suddenly you realize that James Strong's is really just a simple interpretation guide. That's all it is. It's not an exhaustive dictionary. It is not an exhaustive anything. It's just a basic word guide. So we'd better read what Rob Vacanti had to say after all that.
Oh, and Don, let me add to that also that sometimes the only way that you can tell what those are, you have to read that in the context of the thought. You know, who is the I? Who is the, you know, what is the action? Sometimes, you know, a Greek word standing alone can't tell you all of those things.
Well, even an English word out of context is just as dangerous. Yes.
Yeah, just saying I, who is that? Well, only context can tell you who that is. by understanding who the writer is. And he may have been saying, well, he said this, quote, "I went to the bank." Well, again, who the I is, like you said, even in English, changes then from the writer to someone the writer is referring to. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration when you're going in. Now, I can hear people out there saying, "Oh, my head is spinning. You expect me to dig in all this?" No, we really don't. This is for people who become obsessive compulsive about these things and want to know. And I can tell you, you can do this. Don simply wanted to let you know that this is available to you. Now, the thing that we are going to do is to do our level best to dig these things out for you. You're not going to be number one, I don't know Greek the way that Don knows Greek, so I depend on him. And we go into these things together, and by the time we get his knowledge of the Greek and my obsession with context, suddenly something just blooms right in front of us that we never knew.
Yeah.
But Don was wanting to give you this so you can check up on us. If you want to check up on us and see whether or not what we have shared with you is true, we're not telling you this because we need every gospel revolutionary out there, everybody around the planet, to become a researcher of these things, because the fact of it is, nobody in church is.
It's not like money. We do need everybody to give us some money. But you don't all have to speak Greek. Hey, let me get back to Rob Vicandy's comment. Oh, my gosh.
Go ahead.
It's going to be a day of rabbit holes. I can just see that happening. Rob said about that podcast last week where we dealt with 2 Timothy 1:12 in particular, but all of the context leading up to it as well from verse 8. He said, "I just love it when you guys expose the word of faith, minister." Oh, sorry, I misread that. "I just love it when you guys expose the word of filth, ministry. They're haughty."
You can tell he's experienced.
I think so, yes. "They're haughty preaching salesmen and saleswomen. These liars never grow a limb out, but they have a book and a CD telling you how." Love the in-context reading of Romans 3. That was up around verse 23. And the "Before the World Began" gospel. Easy to understand. Thanks for everything, Rob Vicanti.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
Yeah,
you know, I was watching these guys again on TV, like Rob said about these people. I went flipping through channels again, and it seemed like everybody was teaching the same congregation again how to break curses and how to claim promises. It's like, dear God, folks, if you ain't got this right yet, after the 40 years I was involved in it and have known of it, if you don't know how yet, do you think there's no knowing how to do it?
Yeah, you should try a different game.
Yeah, exactly.
Up on the website at the moment, Mike, we've got the perfection videos right there front and center on the front page. And you don't even have to get off the front page to see all, what, 6 or 7 of them.
Oh, wow.
And they are out of this world. Family, if you want to...
And which ones are these again?
Perfection.
Oh, wow.
And they're just perfect, mate. If you want to know how you stand before God, friend, if you want to know how you... are measuring up. You know, we used to have gospel meetings, we used to call them, and they were at 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, and we'd preach the gospel and scare the hell out of people. And I remember one of the favourite ones was the king of Babylon, and he was there, and he'd raided the Jewish temple, and he brought in all of these golden chalices and cups and holy objects. And there he was, drinking out of them and having a good old time with all his buddies. And suddenly a hand and a pen starts writing on the wall. And it wrote, "Meeny, meeny, tickle, you fasten." And he said, "Well, that's interesting. I wonder what that means." "I know. Call Daniel." And Daniel comes in and interprets the writing on the wall, and I have no idea why I started talking about this. What the hell were we talking about? Videos, perfection. And then we'd say, Daniel interprets this and he says, "You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting."
Mm.
And that is how every single Christian lives their life.
Exactly.
Not a damn thing has changed since Nebuchadnezzar.
Oh, Jesus didn't do a thing.
He didn't achieve nothing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, and that was, I don't know, what, 500,000 years before Christ. So that's in 3,000 years, Christ has been bloody lazy.
Yeah.
Highly ineffective. That's how I lived my life. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. It doesn't matter if you're quote-unquote born again. It doesn't matter if you are quote-unquote baptized. It doesn't matter if you are quote-unquote in fellowship. It doesn't matter if you are quote-unquote a member. No. You have been weighed in the balances and found wanting.
And you know, this thing on perfection, you're not going to just find out what. You're going to find out why and by whom. On this series on perfection. I don't know of anyone or any ministry that had ever taught on perfection in this light, that a perfection had been achieved. I don't know of anyone in 2 millennia of Christianity. Just show me where somebody else has ever said this before. Folks, I'm crazy about the gospel. To my knowledge, no one has ever taught these things before. Now, if they have, please let us know. We don't want to give out false information about the gospel or anything else.
Gospel revolution bumper stickers.
Humanity is not just forgiven. Humanity is perfect.
Gospel revolution bumper stickers.
So, yeah, they're still good bumper stickers. I'm so excited today. I'm sorry. You know, Don, you're going to have to keep a cap on me or something here. I turned 66 this year. Don turns 67 this year, desperately grasping for the memories as to how this all happened, because it has overtaken us.
Our nurse.
We started playing in the shallows, and now we have waves of accomplishments and understanding rolling over our heads, and we hardly can keep up with it. The things that are happening around the planet, people who are understanding the gospel and doing mighty things around the planet, that we actually have a shot to seeing this gospel have its impact in this planet.
And if you think that that's overstating it, just wait till later in the show, and we'll tell you where we've opened our most recent office.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's gracious. Later. That's later. Mike,
yeah,
that's later.
I know you've got you. See, you're trying to hold me back here. So I'm being held. So I get the hint. So yes, perfection. You watch the 6 or 7 videos that are on there, and you tell me if you've ever heard anybody else teach on this subject in context, reading straight through. Perfection is the theme of the book of Hebrews. Everything centers around the subject of perfection. And you're going to find that here in these videos. What is perfection? Is anybody perfect? Is it a done deal? Is it something we are striving for? What is perfection all about? Once we understand this issue of perfection, every other Christian doctrine falls. I think I want to do a teaching called The Cross, based on Christianity. Subtitled, The Most Ineffective Work Ever Done on Earth.
I was just thinking, as you were speaking, I was thinking there was something we used to say back in Christianity, and that was the Bible is its own best interpreter. The Bible interprets itself. Now, that was, it sounded really good and holy and wonderful and explanatory and leadership words.
Oh, I know. Oh, God.
But fact of the matter is, it was required because of text proofing.
Mm-hmm.
If the Bible is its own best interpreter, what that meant to say was this, that this verse says this. Oh, look at this other verse. I can make that say the same thing. Oh, and there's another verse over here.
Oh, exactly.
And they all say the same thing. Isn't that wonderful? It was an invention of man as most things in Christianity are, used to avoid reading in context at any cost.
Speaking of just reading in context, and speaking of the word of filth.
Rob for Candy, that was fantastic.
I started calling it the word of fake movement instead of the word of faith movement. You know, the big thing that we had done, and you'll remember this, was, you know, you got to call those things that be not as though they were. Mm-hmm. That's the right here. It is in the scriptures. You have to call those things that be not as though they were. And I remember standing up teaching one day, and I was teaching on that subject, and I read it, and it was like somebody hit me in the head with a bat, because for some reason, while I was standing there reading it, I read it for the first time. It doesn't tell you to call those things that be not as though they were. It doesn't say Abraham called those things that be not as though they were. Google that. Abraham called those things that be not as though they were. You'll find a multitude of teachings on it from Word of Faith preachers.
Uh-huh.
No place does it say, mm-hmm. no place does it say Abraham called those things that be not as though they were. It says, even God, who quickeneth the dead. So if you can quicken the dead, you can also call those things that be not as though they were. But until you can quicken the dead, don't tell me you can call those things that be not as though they were and change them.
Well, like Rob Vicandy said in that letter, it's these people tell you that they can grow a leg out.
Oh,
ain't no videos anywhere.
Not a single one.
Not one video in the whole world showing a leg not growing a out. One. But they will sell you a CD and a book telling you how to do it.
Oh man. Break the curse and claim the promise. Break the curse and claim the promise. Break the curse. How to break the curse and claim the promise. How to claim the promise and break the curse. How to break the curse and claim the promise. How to break the curse and break the promise.
Now, if you're not a chandelier swinger or didn't come out of the chandelier swinging, thigh slapping, toe tapping, hand clapping tradition of Pentecostalia or the Charismaniacs, if you did not come out of that Word of Faith movement, just in case you think that you were free, let me remind you that where the Word of Faith movement tells people how to invoke miracles, fundamental evangelicals tell people how to invoke a good, clean life, how to invoke a good, clean, successful life.
Don't get me started again.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what group you came out of. You had your own tradition of man-made inventions. It's just that simple. And never forget what Jesus said in Mark chapter 7. By your traditions you nullify or make void the word of God.
Amen. Boom, boom.
Michael, we have people sending us in a lot of your old tapes and even your old CDs, ones that we don't host on the site anymore. Now, the reason we don't host them on the site is not because we're ashamed of them. We love our history. We love the history of evolution through which we've gone over 30 years, 40 years, in fact, for us to get to the place where we are free to say what we actually believe. But if you have any old tapes, what I have said to the folks in Canada, and they have honored this in such a wonderful and ready way, is when we have taken these tapes and we've made MP3s out of them, we will give you MP3s of every old tape that we had out there. Now,
man, that's a good deal.
Mm. Now, it's a lot of the stuff that we have preached in the past, we might not preach now. But we're not ashamed to put out there the way we got to where we are. Which brings me to another subject. We have just opened a new Facebook group called Gospel Producers Group. Now, I'm going to explain a little bit about producers. Producers in the Gospel Revolution are those people who've done something worthwhile for the Gospel Revolution. You often hear us say here on the Gospel Revolution that we run a value-for-value model. Now, what we mean by a value-for-value model is we give you value as best as we can, and we trust that you, if you see that you've received that value, will return that value to us. It might be in cash, it might be in time that you spend helping us, it might be in things you send us, in equipment you provide for us. It might be gifts, it might be service, it might be anything. And can you imagine if we had advertising by, the Lighthouse Christian Bookstore or something, we wouldn't be as free to say what we really think, what we really believe. And we think that that's the finest service that we can render anybody. And then, of course, an executive producer is somebody who's done that a whole lot, be it, again, cash or be it time or be it... like Randy French is an executive producer of The Gospel Revolution. He has produced some of our best material, audio material, and all of our professional video material. Marcel Roos in the Netherlands is an executive producer of The Gospel Revolution because he has hosted the 24/7 radio out of his own bedroom. The guy has spent money, he's put hardware together, he's put software together, he's used his nous, and he has kept that service up. And you can go there anytime you want by going to www.gospelrevolution.com, going to Resources, Audio, 24/7 Radio, and you can hear what he's done. And it is nonstop.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, it is, isn't it, mate?
We have a 24/7 radio station broadcasting around the world. Don.
And that's just...
come on.
and on there, he hosts webcasts, podcasts, going back, 12 years now, mate.
My goodness, yeah.
Right back to the beginning of the podcast era for us. So anyone who's given something of value to us, we honor them with the title of producer. Anyone who's done a little bit more for us, we call them an executive producer. And here is how you can get your own producership. Now, are these producerships valuable? If you have a look at movies, if you have a look at any TV episode, you're going to see executive producer at the end or producer. These are real credentials. And they're usable on your cards, on your business letterheads, on anything you want for that matter. And I'm told that on LinkedIn, they are very useful indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So these are not, they started off kind of a bit lighthearted. But honestly, we found people, like most things do in the Gospel Revolution, except for the message, we've had reports back that people have found real value in these producerships.
And they are real, Don, because, I mean, just like you said about the credits at the end of a movie, these people were involved in producing this movie. These people are not just involved, but these people are part of the reason the movie's there. So these are real producerships and executive producerships. These are real, folks. It's just from the Gospel Revolution. It's from Mike Williams Ministries. You are the reason, just like the credits at the end of the movie, as Don told you, this is real. This is, and like he said, we started out kind of as a tongue-in-cheek thing, but then we realized, oh my gosh, it's real. So
it is. Now, starting today, we are providing a fast track to your producership or executive producership. If you want to give a year of your service to the GR at your own pace, if you would like to give us a year of your service to help us produce, present, manufacture, and market the gospel, now by all of that I simply mean help us get the gospel out. That's all I mean. If you will do that for us for 1 year of your life, we will give you an automatic producership. And we have experienced people who are masters at their trade in the past, pastors, marketing executives, website builders, audio presenters, audio editors, movie editors. We have these people on tap.
We do.
And they will lead you and they will tell you what they would like you to do. For example, we are right now reviewing all of our podcasts, right back 12 years worth. And we are going to be getting people to review them and write a review on them. And honest, this is not hard work. All you've got to do is jot down on a piece of paper or in a note, an email to us, your review.
And enjoy the gospel while you're doing it.
and get the gospel pumped into you. Do that for a year and you will have a producership. Do that for 2 years, you'll have an executive producership, and that's without ever having given us a dime. Cash is only one way of helping us. We have these tapes coming in. I need these tapes played out on old tape players and recorded into a computer. Now, I can tell you all the free software you need in order to make that happen. I can give it to you. It's free. It's legal. And it's going to help us produce the history of the gospel revolution in a way that we hope you will all find interesting. Reviewing past podcasts is one thing. Helping us with a website, marketing, producing, and presenting the gospel under the direction and guidance of some very gifted and experienced people. Or perhaps you're one of the people whose experience and wisdom mark you for this. Contact us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com, freedom@gospelrevolution.com. Call me on 615-243-2754. Or call Michael on
832-318-9339.
And one way or another, we will make sure that you're included. We've already got some eager beavers for this project, but you know the old saying, more hands make light work.
And now for something completely different.
Now, Michael, Calgary, Alberta, March 2 oh, through 4.
I am so excited about this, I'm telling you. And I can't talk about March without talking about 2017, before Calgary was concerned. Two landmark conventions took place there. Our first spring conference was on the subject of predestination. You've got videos now that we did on predestination, the very short version of predestination. If you like those, just please remember we've got an entire weekend of teaching on predestination. Then our second one in 2017 was the subject before the foundation of the world. Those two together, I'm telling you, you could take those two conferences and you can create and have an indisputable perception of the gospel that is separate from anything that, and you'll have the whys it's different from Christianity.
And I'll tell you something else. Now, these two bookends, I have heard nowhere else, Michael. And I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of outside information because truth is truth wherever you find it. Now, I'm not suggesting everyone needs to do that, but I just like doing that. And I have heard this information nowhere else.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that the folks will find about it is it has its traditional gospel revolution earmarks. It is in context. It's powerful. I think I'm going to go back and listen to all of it again myself. On these two subjects, predestination and before the foundation of the world, we do not miss one place where this is in English or in the Greek or in the original text or original language. We make sure we've covered every one of them. And we didn't just pull a verse out of context. I remember the one in the book of Acts, where it's very easy just to go to Acts and pull a verse out, you know. And I thought, well, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of context here, but at least the verse is there. Don, we put to bed a 2,000-year debate on who crucified Jesus.
And these are things that people as profound as Luther got hung up on.
Yes. And here they are completely resolved in context, supported by the Greek in this series of predestination. So not only does it tell you who crucified Jesus, why they crucified Jesus, and the total involvement, which just, I couldn't believe I was reading it. It's like, have I been in a stupor all of my life that I've never read these? I've heard these debates about who killed Jesus. And, you know, we've got people of these crazy persuasions that the Jews killed Jesus, therefore we're out to kill Jews. You know, many Jewish people have died because of being Christ killers.
Yeah, the Jews killed Jesus, therefore God cut them off.
Yes.
Romans, what is it, 11? So, Mike, who's teaching with you in this conference?
We have on tap Nardos Kabidi, the newly installed vice president of the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries, a man who was pastoring a church that he founded up until this past month even.
Who else is with you there?
So, yeah, Wade Brewer is on tap to speak again at this conference. We're excited about that.
That Moses and the School Bus, Wade Brewer.
Oh, yes, that one. And everyone loves hearing our gospel illustrator. He'll paint a picture for you you will never forget.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk out of each session with this beautifully painted right in front of you, framed and delivered to you. Something you'll never forget and something you'll have hanging around all the time the rest of your life. That's just the way Wade's illustration of the gospel really is.
The conference is going to be held at the Carriage House Inn. Now, if you'd like to make a reservation, please contact the Carriage House Inn at 1-800-661-9566 and ask for the Grace Conference's special room rate. And if you need to know any more, contact Victor Brennan. He's our man on the spot in Calgary at 403-686-0841.
Never been a sinner, I never sin. I got a friend in Jesus. So you know that when I die, it's gonna send
now,
me.
Now, this week, Michael, from the Friends of Mike Williams and the GR, and you do have a couple of friends there actually, Germa Colston wrote, "The gospel is not just about freedom to leave the institutional church. Leaving the institutional church by itself still leaves a vacuum in the soul." I know exactly what you mean, Germa.
That's good insight, Germa.
I mean, there was a reason we were interested in going to church to begin with. I think the reason was that we had a sincere spiritual hunger. We wanted to know God, and we thought that the church systems had the answers for God, the meaning of life, why we're here, and where we're going when we die. Anybody can leave the institutional church without the need to be introduced to the gospel if there's nothing else to fill that vacuum. The gospel is not there to encourage us to ignore the spiritual aspects of human existence.
And this is the thing that we are really trying to convey to everyone. And folks, I've watched this process for well over 30 years now. People who learn enough of the gospel to get them out of the religion of Christianity, but then please don't cheat yourself out of the continual learning process and the freedom that you begin to discover. There's nobody on this earth that's more free than somebody else. There's just people who know about it and people who don't know.
There you go.
Freedom is not something we gave you, and I'll have people tell me, I understand where they're coming from, Brother Mike, you set me free. And it's like,
we reluctantly agree, not because we're so humble, but the fact is it's not actually really true, is it?
It's not true, and we don't have a need to correct what everybody says. You know, we know where they're coming from. We know what you're saying. We know that you know that, Kate Benham's song that she wrote about me, you're not the savior, but you got me saved. You know?
That's something. Yeah.
And so the process of this really is powerful. And hang in there, folks. This is getting wild. I'm telling you, Don, it's getting wild.
Well, let's just talk about how wild it's getting. Where have we, what's our latest expansion?
Ooh, I am telling you, hang on to your seats. We now have an office open in Beirut, Lebanon. We have several people there, and we have to give kudos to where they are, where they belong, and that's to Nardos Kabidi.
Kudos to Nardos.
Kudos to Nardos. Hey, there we go. We definitely have to thank him for this. This is not something that I worked for, tried to get done. I was informed that we now have a new office in Beirut, Lebanon. I'm telling you, my job is so difficult. I just get informed of all these great successes going on around the planet. And Don, tell, we know who our office manager is there, who's heading up the gospel revolution in there in Beirut, Lebanon. And in fact, we've got a picture. We'll post that picture of her. I think she is a model there in Beirut. And if she's not, she sure should be. From
how do you become a model with a veil across your face?
Well, she is
wearing a hijab.
Yeah. Well, she is not of that religion. So these folks were pretty much involved in what we would describe word of faith doctrine. And I'm telling you what, Nardos reached right in. He already had their confidence, and they knew him. And Nardos reached right in there and pulled these people out of the fire. It's an amazing story. We're going to have Nardos to share that story in Calgary. And it really is amazing. It touched my heart so deeply. I just felt like the wealthiest man on earth to have Nardos on our team and to have him sharing this kind of information with people in Beirut, Lebanon. And you would not believe how deeply the roots of this type of Christianity has grown there in this country in the Middle East. We are having constantly increased influence in Middle Eastern countries and into Islam and into the Muslim faith. That has been increasing ever since we made contact with Moses Gatta, or should I say he made contact with us several years ago now. And found a way to reach the hearts of these people, and we have Bible. We have two Bible schools in Kenya that are attended by Muslim folks. We can't keep you updated on all of these things because we'd just spend an entire show just telling you what's been happening around the world. And folks, when I say this, you have two Bible schools. Hear me out. You have two Bible schools in Kenya that are attended by Muslims, Christians, Catholics, four or five other local persuasions of religions, and they're all sitting together. They're sitting down next to each other listening to the gospel.
And they're saying, if this is God, now, that's a God we can believe in.
Oh, exactly. And they've been questioned at my request. You know, why? Why? Why would you? You've heard about Christianity all your life. And they said, yeah, but we never heard about a Jesus who accepts us. And it's like I was brought to tears with that.
And don't forget Southeast Asia. We have a school of the Spirit in Southeast Asia. We've got them, and it sounds to me like we're going to have one in Lebanon now.
It is going to happen. I can tell you, just as sure as rain, we are going to have a Bible school there in Lebanon. This has been a 40-year journey for me into the gospel, and to see these things in my lifetime. I always felt very confident about what was going to begin to happen. But I honestly thought if I lived to be 85, we would just begin to be seeing these things happen. And here we are 20 years in advance of my projections. Folks, 20 years in advance of my own projections and hopes of things that I'm absolutely persuaded of. But this is far surpassing what I had thought might happen or even could happen in way shorter amount of time than what was predicted by me to happen. So I'm a false prophet. I was prophesying these things to happen. My problem is I'm not a very timely prophet because they're happening way, way sooner, decades ahead of what I thought was possible. Now, this is not possible because I do what I do. I could do what I do and it would be in a vacuum, folks. It would be totally in a vacuum. But with you, our producers, our executive producers, our contributors, whether it's $5 a month or $2 a month, you're all a part of this. Now, not just a sidecar part of it. You're what drives the engine of this. I'm astounded with the gospel. And I can tell you one other thing I'm astounded with. I'm astounded with you. You guys brought down one of the most legalistic Christian religions on the face of planet Earth, and that was the Worldwide Church of God. That organization no longer exists. Now, if you want to know exactly what we were teaching that brought that church down, go back and listen to this little clip that Randy French has put up from his church from 1993. That's what the gospel revolution was teaching at the time that brought down the Worldwide Church of God.
If you see, I think it was a hair that did it, mate. See, you couldn't do that. You wouldn't be able to pull the skin off a rice pudding today because you don't have any hair. But back then, you had. Now, lead me back to Rachel. We haven't put a name out yet.
We still haven't. Now I am the one that's interrupting this show. I'm the one that's causing it to turn to chaos. But the chaos is coming out of my excitement. And again, folks, I'm excited about you. I tell you what, you guys have been amazing and remain so.
You know, when Jesus said, "Come unto me, drink the water that I give you, you'll never thirst again." Well, why the heck are Christians so damn thirsty? Mm. They're always looking for another revelation. They're always looking for another meeting. They're always looking for another preacher. They're always looking for, it's the carrot on the stick business.
Yeah. Well, it is indeed. You know, this has been an unbelievable process that has involved all of our listeners right now. Even those of you that are brand new, you're involved in this history now. You are a part of the progression of this history, a history that I think will be talked about for hundreds of years to come.
Now, take us back to the name of this.
Oh, my gosh. Well, see what excitement this has caused me. Oh, my gosh. Don, I know that her first name is Rachel. Now, I know. Come on. This is getting ridiculous. We got Rachel in Lebanon. We've got Moses in Kenya. Goodness gracious, it sounds like we're trying to reenact the entire Old Covenant. So
try and fit Nardos into that. I don't think you're going
to
do that.
I tried to put Nardos in it. I bet he's got a middle name or something we can tap into, though.
Oh, it'll be Joseph.
Oh, my gosh.
Miriam or something.
So, but I'm going to let you read her last name. She is very proud to take this position with the with Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. We are going to be posting on Facebook a little bit of a bio and everything about her and her photograph. So please be watching. We are such fortunate people, folks. Do you know what freedom is? You see, the reason I say that is because you do know what freedom is. Do you know you didn't know what freedom was under Christianity? You see, I know that you thought freedom was not smoking, not drinking, not cussing, and you're free to believe whatever we teach you to believe. That's the only freedom that you had. You know what freedom is. The only freedom that is taught or preached in the Bible or in the scriptures is freedom from law, freedom from wrath, freedom from judgment. You are free.
Are we ever going to be free to get back to this Lebanon caper?
It's all about this Lebanon caper. We're not moving away from it. I'm just thinking about the gospel going to Lebanon. Donald, we have an office.
Careful now. We've only got an hour and a half to get this show out, you know?
We have opened an office in Beirut, Lebanon. We have access to this beautiful, we have access to the cedars of Lebanon.
Okay, let's have a look at this. I think I'm just going to have to take you in hand at the moment or something, mate. Now, Lebanon, what is Lebanon? Lebanon is a Middle Eastern country. It's Arabic. It speaks its own version of Arabic, Lebanese Arabic. It's a sizable country, and Beirut is a war-ravaged city. I remember from years ago, bombs being dropped in Australia. We have a sizable Lebanese population, quite sizable. 54% Muslim, and it's 40% Christian. So it's got a very substantial Christian minority in that country. And half of those Christians are what's called Maronites. Now, Maronites were people who came out of they followed a monk, a 4th century monk called Maron, who came out of Antioch, where people were first called Christians.
Good Lord.
And they're...
You're kidding me. That's where some of these folks in Lebanon are...
From Antioch.
We're actually in Antioch. Now, where's Antioch?
Antioch's in Turkey. Antioch is, it's in one of the Turkish provinces now.
Ooh, so we're getting all the way back to where this first began to be called Christianity.
Isn't that something? That really is something. There's something called the National Pact in Lebanon, which is an unspoken constitution, sort of, but it declares that anyone who becomes a president of Lebanon must be a Maronite Christian.
Wow.
Yeah, fascinating country. And as you said, of course, there's Pentecostal influences. There are all kinds of influences because all kinds of missionaries have gone there from all kinds of Western denominations. But in this country, there is a young lady by the name of Rachel Mengiste. Rachel, forgive me if I've misquoted your name. Not being from Beirut, I've got a problem there, you can see. Rachel is now the leading light of our office in Beirut, Lebanon.
Mm.
What a great accomplishment. And as soon as we can, we will have details of her up on the web.
Don, and back to the conference in Calgary. Gosh, folks, make your plans to be there. Robert Orr, you're right there, just south of the border. You guys need to get up there. And folks from across Canada, we are advertising in this conference more than we've advertised for any other conference we've had in Canada. So, yes, this conference is coming up. Folks, make your plans to be there. I fully expect to have a good time. Now, if you want to come and have a good time with me, my whole view of this is I'm not coming there for you. I'm coming there for me. And if you want to come and join me and have a good time, let's do it.
So if you're from those northern states in the U.S., North Dakota, Montana, Washington in particular, or even, Oregon and Idaho and Wyoming, South Dakota, it's not that long a drive, and it's a beautiful, beautiful city. One thing about Calgary I found is it reminds me a lot of Houston, as much as it's quite clean. But if you're from British Columbia, if you're from Saskatchewan, Saskatoon, Jasper, Vancouver, we have a lot of people, and for Kamloops, all of those places, we have lots of people who've joined us from over the years. And if you're from any of those places, Edmonton, northern states in the USA, please consider the possibility of a nice drive. And if you're from anywhere and you want to be there.
Hey, we've had people fly in from other countries into this meeting occasionally. So, yeah. Pastors, we've got one pastor from Newfoundland and Nova Scotia that have flown all the way across the country, almost 3,000 miles, to come to this meeting. So,
So we're going to be there for you, and we hope that you'll be there for you too. For no other, I was going to say we hope that you'll be there for us, but no, we hope that you'll be there for you.
Yeah.
We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing. Yeah. We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing. Yeah. We're human beings, folks. We're not human doing. Yeah.
All right. Moving right along now, as they say in the classics. From the GR Private Group, we heard from Mel Martin this week, and Mel Martin said, to whom it may concern, I think he's about to leave us his will, mate.
Uh-oh.
Most people believe that verses in the Bible can be pulled out of their context and stand alone and are self-explanatory. It does seem like it has been concluded by our little brains that because these verses have been broken down into chapter and verse by a numbering system, what Mel's referring to there is something which happened in 1,400 years after Christ. Before then, you didn't have verses and chapters. One presumes that it's okay to pull one out of its designated place because of the verse and chapter concept, like pulling a number out of a hat in hope of winning the door prize, and use it or interpret it as we see fit. So depending on how we feel, what our circumstances are, whatever information is floating around in our heads at the time, perhaps some intense research and probably more things than can be named will determine what a verse will mean, out of context, that is.
Mm-hmm.
We redemptionists have come to understand that this practice of taking verses out of their context has led to a misfortunate perversion of truth of the gospel. It is the progenitor of religion and religious superstition in the Christian world, the cause of the perpetual decaying of the simple truth held in the hearts of all children, that God's love for them is unconditional. We have been bombarded and educated by verses taken out of context so fiercely and consistently for so long by the supposedly highly educated, well-meaning, and yes, loving, pastors, preachers, teachers, and others, but mostly people who really are strangers to us, just popular to the masses, for so long that we are not able to think for ourselves. Mel is saying that we've outsourced our thinking. How true that is. Truly, we were unable to see the forest for the trees. So let's just take a deep breath and set our hearts and minds on learning the Bible in context. It will change the way we think and subsequently our lives. Mel Martin, that is awfully well written and self-explanatory, and wow, and it's exactly the truth.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mel, for writing in to us. We really treasure these emails, and all of our listeners treasure them too. Everybody likes to hear. So those of you who like to hear these things, be one of the guys that does it. So just sit down at your computer and just put, Dear Don on it, and then go from there. And just brief thoughts, something that you've learned this week, something that has been a life changer for you in the process of learning and understanding the gospel, or something you just learned. Or if you have a question, just a comment. We are ready and willing and able to have these comments read online. We're in over 180 countries of the world, so let your voice be heard. Where else would the average person have the opportunity to have their voice heard in 187 countries of the world?
Turn your radio on.
Oh, yes, turn your radio on.
With God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You know, there was another big thing that happened just recently.
What was that?
Michael, it was the 60th Grammy Awards.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I saw that.
Yes, and I mean, everyone was there who was anyone, including Hillsong, who won a Grammy for the best religious song. I guess they've arrived now. I mean, Hillsong is everything now. You don't, you know, just shut your Bibles and listen to Hillsong. I mean, anyone who wins a Grammy has got to be worth listening to, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, boy, I tell you what, that's harkens back for years past in the gospel revolution and Brian Houston, the pastor of that church.
I remember when Brian Houston started that church, and I know, okay, nurse. I remember that, and it was at Burwood in Western Sydney, just up the road from where I managed a music store at the time. And the guy who was the music minister there, his name was Peter Stevenson, and he later moved out of there and started his own recording company. Don't know what you're doing nowadays, Peter. I remember that church. I've been in that church before Brian Houston was even Brian Houston. I mean, it was it, and you have been in that church a few years later. When it was the massive Hillsong.
And, you know, sat with, you know, at lunch with Brian Houston and that goodness. And this was at a time when they were balking at the basic teaching of grace for the Christian, which that's all I was teaching at that time. And then after Joseph Prince learned the gospel of grace and peace from me by me sending him. I don't care what he says. I know the truth of this.
Well, when you have a year of phone calls from Joseph Prince, it's hard to forget that.
I don't know how long of a time it took place, but the fact of it, we did talk and we did talk about his delivery of this and was questioning me about as to whether or not what he said was true or not.
You're talking about Joseph Prince there, aren't you?
Joseph Prince would called me and sought my approval on his message that he had just taught on that Sunday morning to see what I thought about
it. Approval given thing, you?
Yeah, and it was good stuff. I approved, and of course now Joseph denies that he has ever even spoken to me or knew who I was at all. But he is.
What happens now is Joseph doesn't approve of you.
Yeah, exactly. And but now Joseph Prince is one of the main speakers on this topic of grace to Hillsong, the message that they resoundingly rejected when I went there and taught it. And maybe he does a better job at it than I did. I can certainly accept that. But I think they just kind of realized the way the wind was blowing, and they realized that there was no resistance that they could give to denying even Christians the grace of God, you know, in some understanding of this free gift we have from God through Christ. So, yeah. There's hardly a ministry you can mention around the world that somehow has not been touched very directly. Jimmy Swaggart, Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, the Copelands, all of these ministries drastically impacted. Kenneth Hagin Ministries, Marilyn Hickey, impacted and moved on, or impacted and gathered some of those things and kept it in their statements about grace.
So you actually spoke in Hillsong in Brian Houston's church?
Yes, I did. Now, I was not one of the main speakers, and I did not speak from his stage. They gave me a side area in the main sanctuary to speak on a Saturday, I think it was, to kind of test the waters, I think. And I
spoke in his church, you know.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I spoke to a friend of mine at the door.
I don't want to overstate my involvement there in that church because it was not large. After I did, I think, two or three sessions there on the side, there might have been 100 people there or something. But I think they did that to test the waters to see what I would do. I can tell you all 100 people were thrilled with what they heard, but I was not invited to come and speak then in the main sanctuary for sure.
Kind of tells a story, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, really.
I wanted to just talk about our podcasts for a bit.
Oh, let's do it.
We have had some massive responses to our podcasts. And the top 10 episodes of all time at the moment is Faith, Hope, and Prayer. That was number 5 of a 4-part series.
My goodness.
Faith, Hope, and Prayer, 4 of 4 is the second one. The one entitled But I Say, and by the way, you can put any of these titles in and it'll bring them up, is number 3. The fourth one is Paul's Dialectic Logic, or Whose Faith Is It Anyway? The fifth one is Separate or Separated. The Hallmark Gospel Debunked. Faith, Hope, and Prayer, 3 of 4. Religion's Faithless God. Great Minds Think Differently, While Fools Never Differ. Treasure in Earthen Vessels.
What a treasure trove.
Yeah, mate. Look, we have, what have we got? We got 12 years at 50 weeks a year, which is 500 and, what, nearly 700 episodes there that you can pick from. And you, I'll guarantee you'll find something good in every single one of them from day one back in October of 2006. Family, remember, if you have any questions, leave them on area code 234-560971. That whole number is 1234564-0971. If you're calling from outside of the USA, just attach your external international dialing code in front of that and you'll get straight through to our voicemail. Leave us a question. We like questions because
questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
In the meantime, if you're a registered Amazon user, then Amazon will donate to Mike Williams Ministries 0.5% of everything you buy from them. It won't cost any more. It won't take any longer to get to your door. Nothing else will change except now you'll be an active participant in the gospel revolution without spending one extra cent. Michael, last week we had a really, really top podcast where we dissected 2 Timothy 1:12 in context with the preceding verses.
Mm-hmm.
We have had so much great feedback on that. It's not funny. Thank you, family, for enjoying it. And thank you for hearing these podcasts.
Mm.
It was all about believing and knowing.
Yeah.
And the difference between them.
This is going to be part of the subject of the logic and common sense of the gospel. Why is the gospel rooted in logic and common sense? Because it is not rooted in belief. Now, you'll want to write that down. You'll want to remember this for the rest of your life. Why is the gospel rooted in logic and common sense? Because it is not rooted in beliefs. Beliefs have been some of the most destructive things that's ever come to this planet. We've been comparing your beliefs to my beliefs, to somebody else's beliefs, the Hindus' beliefs, the Jehovah Witnesses' beliefs, 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 beliefs. The gospel is the power of God. It is saturated with logic. It is nothing but common sense because it is rooted in knowledge. It is not rooted in beliefs. It's rooted in knowledge. Beliefs take up where knowledge leaves off. We're going to get into this topic in Calgary. The line of understanding and the delineation of this is brought by Paul, who taught about belief. But as you saw in last week's teaching on this show, in a very important place, it was very mistranslated. We've gone through the topic of belief. We understand from John chapter 12, after going through almost 90 verses on belief, that nobody believed, and that God declared us all in unbelief. What is more important in understanding the gospel? Unbelief is more important than belief.
How do you figure that?
Because that is what God had to do with belief, the requirement to believe. He declared us all in unbelief so that he might have mercy upon all.
Where is that?
That is in Romans. In Romans chapter 11, Paul makes this incredible statement. And then if you want to know how exciting this concept was to Paul, that we were all declared to be in unbelief, then read the next verses that follow to the end of the chapter. Paul's euphoria is what I call it. Paul lost it. He just totally lost it. after he made this incredible statement that God had declared all in unbelief that he might have mercy. Mercy doesn't come upon believers. Let me restate that. Mercy does not come upon belief. Mercy comes upon unbelief.
You're saying that as if you're trying to explain it to your mother.
I'm saying it like I'm trying to explain it to myself.
I'd like to chime in somewhere around here.
Chime, brother, chime.
Okay. Mark 9. It just occurred to me. Now, I've known
oh,
this.
Oh, no. Here you go again. Remember, this is what you did to the last PowerCast, and it just went all haywire, and we went into something that was so amazing.
It all went south from there.
All right, where are you going? I got my Bible here.
Mark chapter 9.
Mark 9.
Oh, you got a Bible.
You start talking, I get my Bible out.
Yeah. That's what the judge used to do, made me swear on it.
And where are we going here?
We're going to verse, I don't know, 20 or so.
Is it 20 or not? What do you mean 20 or so?
Or so. What's wrong with you? Just follow me here.
I'm on so now.
Now, if I am right, this is just after Jesus and the disciples come down from the Mount of Transfiguration. And when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude, verse 14, about them and the scribes questioning with them. And down into verse 17, it says, and one of the multitude said, Master, I've brought unto you my son who has a dumb spirit. That word dumb actually means a mute spirit. He's deaf and dumb. Oh, sorry, he's mute.
And this is where Norval Hayes would say, they're all dumb.
Yeah, and your other friend would say, you ain't got troubles. You just need faith. And wherever this demon takes him, it tears him and foams and gnashes at the teeth. Sounds like epilepsy or something. 19, verse 19, he answered and said, O faithless generation, this is Jesus speaking, how long shall I be with you? Or unbelieving generation. The word faithless is apistos. In other words, it's without faith. It's not fighting faith. It's just you've got no faith. How long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you and all this crap? And verse 20, and they brought unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tore him, and he fell on the ground and swallowed foaming. And he asked his father, how long has he been like this? Verse 21. And he said, since he was a kid. Verse 22. And oft times he throws himself into the fire and into water to drown himself. And if you can do anything, please have compassion on us and help us. Now, Jesus says, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. Now, this guy said, I do believe, but I can't believe. I want to believe, but I can't believe. Oh, Jesus, look, if you say I got to believe, I'm going to tell you I'm believing. Please help my unbelief. This human being was honest to the core because he loved his kid so much. He just wanted the kid healed. But he was smart enough, intelligent enough, and honest enough to know he couldn't believe.
Yeah, exactly. Unbelief is such a powerful tool in the understanding of the redemption of the world. Belief is a powerful tool in destroying your understanding of the redemption of the world.
I'd never thought of this situation before in Mark chapter 9. Here we have a living example of a person who was honest enough to say, look, I'd love to. I'd really, really like to. But I can't. I need your help with my belief before my belief can even help me with my kid getting healed.
No, exactly.
Wow.
Chapter 9 in verse 11, and they ask him, saying, why say the scribes that Elias must first come? And verse 12, and he answered and told them, Elias verily cometh first and restoreth all things. Now, I think Jesus claimed to be Elias, that he was this reappearance of Elias. Now I want you to listen to this, though, because he said, first, Elias came to restore all things. Now, that is to restore and bring to full the old covenant, the law. Now, think about what Jesus did when he was here. Now, this was all to prove the point of unbelief. So he comes in and restores all things. Remember his teachings on the law in Matthew, I say unto you, but I say unto you, but I say unto you.
Mm-hmm.
And you call it adultery. I call a thought adultery. The law calls a thought. This is the restoration of all things. This is this Elias ministry that was in Christ to restore.
And Elias, of course, is Elijah.
Yes. It is Elijah. And he was bringing back this full understanding because it had been watered down. The law had been watered down. The consequences of the law had been watered down. Prophecy had been watered down. Everything had been watered down. So before the world would ever understand the ministry of Christ, he had to restore all things because the law, the Psalms, and the prophets are about Jesus, and they were there to give full understanding. But he said, Elias, or Elijah, verily cometh first and restoreth all things, and how it is written of the Son of Man, that he must suffer many things and be set at naught. So here, Jesus said, yes, here to restore all things, and then what is the next step after restoring all things? To be set at naught. Wow. But I say unto you that Elijah is indeed come, and they have done unto him, speaking of himself, whatsoever they listed or desired. And listen at this, as it is written of him. So everything that happened to Jesus, it was written of him to do. See, that's why we base this in knowledge, not in belief. All of these things that happened to Jesus, it was written about him before. See, this isn't just knowledge that people, well, somebody knew this and somebody knew this. This is, they knew it before it happened. That's why this is based in knowledge. It was known before it happened. It was known before it happened. Is this a belief system for me? No. Let me tell you something. You tell me an entire man's life history and everything that would happen to him and that he would do and accomplish before he's ever born, hundreds of years before he's ever born, and is that beliefs? Honey, that takes you so far from belief. That is knowledge doubled down. Knowledge that is manifestly revealed before the fact takes place. Well, are you basing it in fact, Michael? It's not even based in fact. This knowledge was based before the fact happened. We've got such solid ground to stand on with the gospel. It really is quite amazing. That is the prelude that goes into this discussion about faith and Jesus already beginning to set aside, first off, taking his role in this and placing it as centerpiece. I've come to restore all things and to be set at naught. Two things are about to happen here. I am come to restore all things and to be set at naught. And he said it would all happen as it was written. These people would do what they did because of what was written about Christ. And he's setting this incredible stage here as to the premise for all things being restored and being set at naught all at the same time. And it's all around this subject of faith, Don. It is absolutely powerful. Man, I'm sure that we could go through dissect this entire chapter, but we just don't have the time today.
Well, I just want to comment on this, that he has this dialogue regarding knowledge. He talks about knowledge and it's a knowledge that was had before the events.
Yes.
And he chooses that exact moment, almost presciently, before somebody came and he demanded believing out of him. And this person was smart enough to know that he couldn't believe if his life depended on it.
Yeah, what a smart fella.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
All they care about is getting money, 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 money. Even retail stores give people more respect than that. I don't understand why we've become so commercialized with religion. What does this have to do with God?
Just quickly before we go, how has the pledge drive gone, mate?
We're winding it up this week, and it has gone well. And we are, I would say that we have fallen short of our goal, but we have certainly put a big dent in the situation, that's for sure. So we'll be thanking you guys collectively on our final show up that will include the pledge drive will be next week. You know, folks, even when we do pledge drive, we just don't talk about money. I don't know what's wrong with us. I honestly don't know what's wrong with us, but we have a pledge drive that we normally set aside extra time and time to do this, but we just never get around to it. So you're just going to have to be self-motivators when it comes to this issue of contributing to the gospel, because we just get too excited about the gospel. If you're that excited about the gospel too, consider what you could do in this pledge drive. We've had some folks that have tripled, quadrupled their contribution. We've had new people start on board as monthly contributors, and there's some people I haven't been able to get a hold of yet. So if I've left a message for you, I'm not going to keep bugging you. So just, you know, try to give me a call back. And it's not that when you call back, I'm going to be expecting you to give. Just give me a call back. I love hearing from you guys. And all of you that I've talked to, you know that that's the truth, because we really have some powerful conversations during this during these pledge drives. It keeps us in contact and communication. I think one of my favorite things that I have enjoyed of recent of doing it has been doing these pledge drives. I'll admit to you, it was the dread of my life. But that was before Jeff Robertson gave us a very clear understanding of who our contributors are. And I don't have to face the nasty people on the phone. You got to realize when I did this, I face nasty people. This whole pledge drive, I tell you, I was thinking the other day, Don, about, you were talking about how this started in 2006. You've got to understand that I rode this former ministry into the ground through 2005 until Glenn Klein very graciously offered to start doing a program in 2006. Let me tell you what happened up until 2005, just the very last part of it as we close out this PowerCast and this pledge drive. In 2005, I had taken a job as a personal trainer and cook for an individual. In exchange, they gave me a corner bedroom with a single bed in it, and a single small bed, and access to the guest bathroom. And I cooked all the meals. I did all the food, all the planning for the meals, six meals a day of appropriate food. I did all the shopping for that. I took the person to the gym. I trained them, and they gave me a monthly salary out of that. Now, the transition of driving down from Illinois down to all the way down to South Florida, which this was in Fort Lauderdale, I was doing this. I made that trip on an old car that was donated to the ministry. I had to stop. I remember the humiliation and the embarrassment. I had to stop at some friends of mine in Atlanta, Georgia, and tell them I just wanted to stop and say hello. But the fact was, I couldn't make it to South Florida. And so I spent the night there with them. They were very gracious. And I had to ask them for $100 to be able to have gas to get down to this job that I was going to do to be able to live. That's where we went to. And cutting ourselves off from Christianity and all of the former ministry that we had had, all of the former success, after speaking in churches of thousands, realizing, you know, in a day, $25,000 coming in just from tape sales. And we went all the way down to that. That was 2005. 2006, Glenn Klein intervened and started something that has been the joy of all of us. It has been a ride. So 2006 is when we really started broadcasting the gospel around the world. And here we are at 2017. So, goodness gracious, 2006, 2016, 17, this is 2018. And so 12 years. Now, see, I've been in the ministry over 40 years, 45 years, but the success opening an office in Beirut, Lebanon. Now, see, this is after 12 years when we began to try to share this gospel around the world. Up until 2005, I was just being kicked out of churches and humiliated, degraded, insulted, and put in my place. And my place eventually came to being a personal trainer and a cook and a grocery shopper for an individual. And I enjoyed it. I have to tell you, I really did enjoy it because I knew I was being of, at least I was being of help to someone. So this has been quite the journey, guys. Thank you so much for participating in this pledge drive. I will never forget my friends who gave me the $100 to make it from Atlanta on down, because I was stuck. I had every possession I had was loaded in a car that was donated. And I had to have $100 to be able just to complete the journey. So it's been an amazing trip. I have no regrets whatsoever. There's times when I think about the fact that I could be making several million dollars a year right now if I'd have stayed where I was. And it's not even a thought of wishing I had done that. I'm so thankful for the direction that life took that has brought me here.
And so, family and friends, it is that we must leave you. If you would like to partner with us and not just the in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else, just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. If you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States area code 12345640971. And remember, in the words of Mike Turi, we don't give God glory. We are God's glory. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it is good night from Mike Williams, right here in Palm Beach Gardens. And again, folks, thank you so very much. You are the crowning achievement of the Gospel Revolution, and not only the achievement, but you're the ones that are causing this gospel to be spread around the planet. And now, with a brand new office open in Beirut, Lebanon. Thank you so very much.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again. But
surely better.
Been gone to church since I was a boy. Now I'm old and I'm low on joy. I feel tired. Is there something I missed? Or is it just that I'm a Methodist? I got the Methodist blues. Sit in the sanctuary Sunday morn. Minister talks about a being reborn. I got a load of guilt that I've been carrying. I wonder if I should have been Unitarian. The organ is soupy, the pastor is bland. I leave afterward and I shake his hand. Sometimes I'd like to shake my fist. That's what it's like to be Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. Lot of odd people sitting in the pews want the sermon to reflect their views. Some of these Christians, they are the rudest. Maybe I ought to try being Buddhist. Ah, people gossip about who did what. The ladies' circle is a pain in the butt. I wanna slap their face or at least their wrist, but I can't 'cause I am a Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. It's not easy being Methodist. Troubles, we got a whole long list. We're too rational, too Socratic. I wish we were charismatic. Same 10 people always volunteer. Half of them old and the others just weird. I am blue and I'm getting more bluish. Maybe Jewish. Ah, everyone is afraid of change. Don't like anything new or strange. We get our underwear in a twist, and that's how it is with the Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. By John Wesley, not Chuck Berry or Elvis Presley. We're not so hip, but we persist. We go on being Methodist. We got the Methodist blues. When we die and go up in the air, St. Peter will hold out a diadem and say, shh, there are Baptists in there. They thought it would just be them. And if a Baptist you happen to meet, they may regard you as a foreigner. We got Catholics across the street and Muslims right around the corner. Oh, I got the Methodist blues. Oh, I got the Methodist blues.
Ba-do-da-da.
Listen. In your car or even your neighborhood bar, you can listen with your whole family. Do a
gospel revolution.